Last time we covered the second and third proofs to the eternity of the world. It would be natural for me to go back into the second proof, but I do not want to open up a Pandora's box at this point. The second proof is probably a proof I'll be signed. So I want to go to the fourth proof because I think what? That's what's up. So what I want to do is we'll go to the fourth proof, and then from there we'll sort of like take a much more. We'll go into more in more in depth into some of the central topics and issues. Derech Avias, the fourth way. Let me read it from I'll read it from the Schwartz edition. Hu Oymel, he says, Kol Mechodesh, everything which is created, right? Kol Mechodesh, everything which is created, Efsharos Chidushu Kodemes L'Chidusha Bezman. In other words, the possibility of its creation has to exist before it's actually created in time. And that's what, in fact, actually the translation of Pinnas is the possibility of its being produced precedes in time the production of the thing itself. Kein kol mishtana. Similarly, everything which changes, efsharos hishtanos kodemes lebizman. So there has to be a possibility of change before the thing changes. Okay? Banocha zois hu mechayev shatnu asivoivis masmita. Okay? So, based upon this, right, he makes a necessary inference as the circular motion, right, that in fact, actually, it has no end and no beginning. Right? So, therefore, because of this, in other words, the general physical law. Right, the physical law, the physical principle is that anything which changes its possibility has to exist beforehand. And I guess one consequence of this is that circular motion is eternal. So, based upon this, they came to prove the eternity of the world. Before there was a world, I'm reading now for the Schwartz edition. This is page 303. Before there was a world, the possibility of its creation was a possibility. That's a terrible English sentence. Right? Its creation was a possibility. Or put this way. No. In other words, before the world was created, right? So there's three possibilities. Right? Its creation is either possible, has to be, or cannot be. In other words, anything that's created, I guess anything, there's only three possibilities. Either it can't be created, it can't be, or it has to be created, or it could be created. This is like this. Im chidusho mechuya. So if the world has to be created, harinim tzatomi. So therefore, for sure, it always has to have been, because it has to be. If the world can't be created, so there could not have been a world. Okay, now let's assume the world can possibly be created, but not necessarily so. In other words, what's the basis of this? In other words, actually, he says over here, Mahan no say, what? You know, what's the basis of this? So on the bottom I see he says, what's the substratum of this possibility? Right? That's actually what Pinnas translates. And if it was possible, the creation of the world is a possibility, what was the substratum of the possibility? I'm not really sure how to express that in English. In Yeshivish would say, what's the chefts of the possibility? In other words, there has to be something.
It's a heft of a possibility.
What?
What's a chesed of a possibility?
A possibility is something. It's not just a fleeting imagination of the mind.
I think the word we want is potential, not possibility.
No, but that's but I don't want to, but no say. What's it not say the potential? In other words, maybe he says, in other words, there must be something which gives rise to the possibility. A possibility has to be something in the world. That's called a chepzer. Like the chayim says, a shtar is a chepzer. Just in words, a shtar is a chepzer. In other words, if I say something's possible, there must be something which makes it possible. So that which makes it possible must have existed. Zois derech abas oitzma says the Rambam, this is a very powerful proof. Lechichas kadmas ha'olam. Interesting. He seems to like this proof the best.
How is that, I don't want to go back to number two because that's what we said, but how is that different than the superficial wrong reading in number two, which is there must have always been something preceding it?
I'll tell you why. I think what's going on in the Rambam is the following thing. I think, and this is going to be very clear in the next thing he does too. Actually, this was I was going to speak about it, but now that you asked the question, no. I think if you look at the proofs, that there's a progression of proofs from more physical to more abstract. You know what, for example, the first proof has to do with motion. Okay, the second proof is matter. The third proof is already like anti-motion or anti-substance. The fourth proof is already like potential. In other words, and actually, the next proof the Rambam's going to bring is going to be the concept that how could you say that, if, you know, how could there be a change in God? If you look at actually the proofs that Maimonides Rambam is offering, there is no question about it that the proofs are in ascending theoretical order.
So motion is more physical than...
Right. In other words, the first proof is motion. So every motion needs a mover. Okay? Because I guess for the Greeks, motion is the most obvious thing that we see in the world.
Is that more physical than matter?
Though? Right. And then comes matter, because a substratum of matter. In other words, we're speaking about matter without its qualities. That's a little bit more like, more amicus there, right? And then the third thing has to do with a anti-property. That's a little bit more abstract. And finally, this is more abstract. Or like the possibility, what gives rise to a possibility of something's existence? It's almost like the eternity of the world is not necessarily physically eternal, but, you know what I'm saying? In other words, the Rambam is saying here that even if I admit that the world was created at some time, since the possibility, that's the basic possibility of being created, that possibility has to exist before that. It's more theoretical. That's what I would claim. Okay.
So number two is substratum of material. This is of matter. This is substratum of potential.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I think. The Rambam's proofs are becoming much more theoretical, which we'll speak about in Mitzvah Hashem. Okay, now goes on the Rambam and says, "Echad haharifin ben hamedabrim." What are the harifin from the medabrim from the kalam? Once again, the as we mentioned. The proofs that the Rambam is bringing, right, are proofs of Aristotle, of the eternity of the world. The Kalam, which were the Metukalim, I think is the proper Arabic expression, I'm not sure in Arabic that's how you pronounce it, they offered proof. I mean, the Rambam's entire Mor Nevuchah, as we explain, is an attack on the Kalam. That is to say, the Kalam offered proofs of creation ex nihilo. The Rambam basically believe that these proofs, since they violated Aristotelian science, right, are to be discarded and constitute really a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name. This we will see in Mitzvah Hashem in Perek Tazayin, chapter 16. Now, the Rambam, it's interesting, the Rambam is going to defend now the proof of this proof of Aristotle against the Kalam. The great paradox of the Mor Nevuchah. The Rambam is opposed to the eternity of the world, But he's defending the proofs of turning the world against the Kalam, who are taking the same position as the Rambam. That's the great paradox, at least of the chapters of creation in the Melech Nevuche. So he says, Echad ha-Harifin miben ha-Medabrin. He calls him Harifin, which means the Rambam seems to like this question. Habul Chorem, this is one of the later Kalam philosophers. Ta'an claims, Shu'ifrich is a koshi azeh ba'omer. One of the Kalam people feels that he's schlugged up. He's refuted this claim. How's he refuted it? Have shusi etzel apoyo, v'loi b'dav hanifo, of every good. The possibility of something being created is in God, it's not in the world. In other words, when we speak about the possibility of something being created, the possibility resides with the Creator, not with the created thing. So even if you say, so therefore what? So even if you say that the possibility of the thing being created was before the thing created, if the world's eternal by definition, but since the possibility resides with God, right? So you have no proof that there was something in the world, namely this possibility, which precedes the creation of the object itself. It's a beautiful chat. But the Rambam isn't like this. Achay is a klum. It's nothing. The yeshivish answer. Garnished. That's a hakap. Dvam b'teila. Why? Ki eile shnei efsharos. He puts here in parentheses, Schwartz, mini efsharos, which means there's two types of possibilities. It's fei dinen. The two types of possibilities. Shechein kol dover mechudash, right? Everything which is created, efsharos chidushoy kodemes loy, its possibility of creation preceded its creation. And also the person who created it also had the potential of creating it. In other words, basically, there's two potentials. There's the potential within the creator to create something, and there's the potential that you have to be created. Says the Rambam, for sure, without any doubt, the Rambam states that there are two types of potentials. Efsharos b'chomer sheyekach, a possibility in the matter that it can be created. Efsharos b'poyel sheyekach, also a possibility in the creator. So what's interesting is the Rambam says that inachinami, there's a potential in the creator, but there's also a potential independent of the creator. That's what he's saying. He says this as a matter of fact. Okay. You see, once again, he wants to make sure, there's no question about it, he wants to make sure that Aristotle's arguments are tight. As we'll see later, Mitzvah Shem and the Rambam never really refutes these arguments. We'll see in a little while. Eile ikre adrocha ma'asher hoylech ben aristo b'chachachas kalbos ha'oylem mitzad ha'oylem ma'atzmai. In other words, these are the main ways which Aristotle proves kalbos ha'oylem. Like we said before, the Kadmus Ha'olam, this is Aristotle. In other words, Ben Aristotle believed in Kadmus and turning the world in a strong sense. Okay, now, the Rambam adds a very interesting paragraph here, which actually he referred to earlier in Parashat Gimel, and we will, we're going to speak about that. Okay? Now, יש עוד דרכים שצינו בי שבו אחריו, שהסיקו עושה מן הפילוסופיה שלו. So, right? Right? There are other ways that people who came afterwards, right, who in fact actually, I guess, came to conclusions from Aristotle's philosophy. בהן הם מוכיחים את קלבס האוילה מזן אלוהי יסל השבוע. They proved קלבס האוילה from God himself. How do they prove from God himself? One of them is what is said. If God created the world after nothing, after non-being, after vacuum, creation is the alone. In other In other words, before God created the world, he was a potential creator. And when he created the world, he became an actual creator. From potential to actual. There's a change in God. God was a potential creator and a natural creator. Okay? In other words, what we see in God, we see that God contains a property of potential and actual. Of course, that's a direct contradiction to monotheism, certainly to the Maimonian conception of the total incorporeality of God and to his negative theology, Ayin Rishimu. The Kachish Koishi Godo, Ruz Loi Lachol Bar Das. Ah, that was the Rambam. Ruz Loi Lachol Bar Das Lachshoi Va Pitron Koishi Zev Vigili Soidoi. Very interesting. Kol Bar Das should think about this difficulty, Vigili Soidoi, and the revelation of its deep secret. Interesting. First of all, before we, this proof over here actually appears in the Rambam in chapter 13. The Rambam actually mentions this. On page 300, this is chapter 13. He says, Avshalom azayis buzah haloshem, it's going to be daite, doi, hu shemin ha-nimna. Okay. Even though Aristotle didn't say this, in this language, on page 300 now, in the Schwartz edition, by the way, the conclusion from Aristotle's position is, it's impossible, right, that by God, there should be like a rotzer to do something. In other words, before he did it, now he wants. If you call him a tzias, it's always like, if you did a tzias, but so the ak loy masa shalach ha'edda. V'kamo shemin ha'nimna shakel ye'edda o yistan ha'atzbusa. Just like it's impossible that God should not exist. Kein tzoy ba'ritzo shemin ha'nimna shistan ha'atzbusa shalachel o shalachel o shalachel. It's impossible that what? That God, there should be a chiddush rotzer, there should be a new will of a kodesh baruch hu. Now, very interesting. Whose proof is this? I'm going to make a conjecture, a boich conjecture, and not based upon any information. I claim this is the Rambam's argument. I have several diyukim to make. First of all, the Rambam says in Perek Yudalah, there's Derech Rishon, there's Derech Shniya, Derech Shlishis, Derech Chaviyas, right? By Derech Loshen Akeva. In Kiddushin Epis, there's a Basa Matin, there's Derech Loshen Zohar Lech and Akeva. How come this is not a Derech Hamishas? He just threw this out. Now he says, over here, Sheisiku Oisem Min HaPhilosophim Shaloi. In other words, people concluded from his philosophy. Who was this person who concluded his philosophy? I claim it's the Rambam. Because look at the Rambam says, in Perek Yud-Gimel. The Rambam says himself, right? Really says the Rambam, what comes out, what Aristotle is really saying, the reason Aristotle is what he's saying is, there can't be a change in God. I wonder whether, in fact, Maimonides is behind this proof. That's very interesting. Of course, a proof that comes from the Rambam is certainly further, more worthy of contemplation or reflection than anything else. And that's where the Rambam says, Roy loy lechol bar das lachshoyv al pisra in koshi zeva gilu soito. What's the Rambam mean? That was, I want to claim, it's a little bit mashma, it seems evident in the Rambam, that the Rambam understands that this is the real philosophical reason or difficulty with creation ex nihilo. Rambam himself understands the difficulty. And the Rambam says that every Baal Da'a should think about this difficulty. And as a consequence of that, I want to claim that the Rambam claims the difficulty remains, and the Rambam's going to make a chulent out of this. The Rambam's going to make something from this. A little bit later. Okay? Okay, fine. Now, first of all, I want to outline a little bit what's going on in the Rambam, so we can see the forest from the trees. Right? How much time do we have?
40 minutes.
What?
40 minutes.
Oh, very good. Okay, fine. Now, first of all, like this. The Rambam brings two other drachim later on in the parashah, which I'm not going to go into right now. But I want to get an overview, a little bit, of the next several parakim, how the Rambam is going to, in fact, actually contend with these things. First of all, in chapter 15, the Rambam is going to claim that Aristotle himself never claimed that these were proofs. Well, that's what chapter 15 is. Chapter 15 basically is, right, an argument that Aristotle himself never claimed that these were proofs, but that it was commonly viewed that these were proofs. It was somehow the, in other words, the marketing of Aristotle claimed that he had proved these things, like, you know, many organizations market different types of proofs. But in fact, Aristotle himself never meant this as a proof. In fact, in the Rambam, on page 308, at the end, is that in the Schwartz edition, which is the very end of chapter 15, the Rambam says, maybe I'll actually read it from the Pinnis edition. I don't know why I'm going Schwartz or Pinnis edition. On page 292, he says, to sum up, nothing in the methods that we have set forth in this chapter is capable either of establishing an opinion as correct or of proving it false, of arising doubts with regard to it. And we advance the things we have only because we know that the majority of those who consider themselves as perspicacious, even though they have no understanding of anything in the sciences, decide simply that the world is eternal to acceptance of the authority of man, celebrated for their science who affirm its eternity. Whereas they reject the discourse of all the prophets because their discourse does not use the method of scientific instruction. It was, basically, the summary of the Rambam is that science, Aristotle never claimed to prove anything. In fact, what's very interesting is the Rambam says you can't prove it true, you can't prove it false. Understand something. If you can't, so what the Rambam is really saying is, it's not a proof that it's true. It's not, the Rambam and Aristotle never proved that it's true. People think he proved it's true. Of course he says you can't prove it's false either. The Rambam's admitted you can't prove it false. Okay, in other words, now, so that's chapter 15. So chapter 15 establishes the fact that Aristotle, like the neo-modernists would say, science, makes assumptions, paradigms. There's no proof of these things, but it's the way science works. Now, that's chapter 15. Now, chapter 16, the Rambam bashes the Kalam. Of Hashkaf in chapter 16. In other words, why is the Rambam refusing the proofs of the Kalam? And the Rambam says basically the Kalam are anti-scientific proofs. That's chapter 16. Chapter 17 and chapter 18 are interesting. Why? Because chapter 17 is a general argument Chapter 17 is a general argument. I'm sorry. Chapter 17 is a general argument. He argues against these proofs. Right? And chapter 18 is a refutation of the final proof, of which I'm claiming is the Rambam's proof, that there can't be a change in God. So what's interesting is, how did the Rambam organize the Megillah Nevuchim? Right? Chapter 15, once again, chapter 15, he claims the assertion that Aristotle never meant as a proof. Chapter 8, chapter 16, he bashes the Kalams, proofs of the creation of the Allah. Chapter 17 is a proof, or at least an argument, against the first four arguments of the eternity of the world, claiming that the arguments they're not absolute proofs. They don't have to be like that. They're assumptions. And chapter 18, which is in fact actually a very, very deep chapter, is an attempt to deal with this Kain Shel Eliyahu, this fifth kais, this proof about the fact that creation of Theolo claims that there's been a change in God. So it's clear that the Rambam understands that the defense of creation ex nihilo of the first four is totally different than the defense of creation ex nihilo from the last proof. Okay, now I want to make the following thing. What is it here about this last proof? I'm calling it the fifth proof. That the Rambam says, "Roy lechol bar das lachshoyev al pitro and koshi zem begilu soida." What's so deep about this? First of all, that's a serious proof. Because what's happening is the tables are being turned on the Rambam. If you believe in creation ex nihilo, then what? Then your monotheism is being compromised. Now, I want to remind you that this is in fact actually one of the central paradoxes in creation of the Megillah Nevuchim. We mentioned already in the, I'm sure it was the first year, that the Rambam says in the very, very beginning of the second chelik of the Megillah Nevuchim, that one of the assumptions that he's going to make, assumption number 26, he says this in the introduction to the second volume. It's page 256 in the Schwartz edition. That one of the assumptions he's making is that the world's eternal in order to prove God's incorporeality.
Does he say
that
at the beginning?
What?
He says that all proofs are based on that.
Right, right. In other words, he says
all the way at the beginning.
Well, yeah. He says in the Hanach, in what's called the Hanachos, the introduction, page 256. And what we explained is that in order to make God incorporeal, it's necessary that the universe, at least in time, be infinite. In other words, once you limit the universe in time and in space, then beyond the universe is obviously God, and therefore you corporealize God. In other words, the maintenance of the incorporeality of God, right, is connected with the infinitizing, right, of the physical universe from the standpoint of time. In other words, the Greeks understood the universe was bounded physically, but at least in time, right, it's continuous, and therefore, because the universe is continuous, God can't have a body, because it has to be an infinite force in order to keep the universe going eternally, and therefore it can't be contained within a finite, right, corporal being. So in other words, the Rambam has established very clearly that the eternity of the universe, conceptually, is critical to the maintenance of the incorporeality of God and monotheism. Here now, the tables are being turned. Because if the Rambam is now going to defend the opposite position, that the world was created ex nihilo, he has to now contend with the corporalization of the Eibishter, of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, of God. And that's a serious problem. And that's really the kasha of the Rambam here. The kasha of the Rambam here, and I claim this is the Rambam's kasha. Like I explained, this is the Rambam's kasha. The Rambam is now speaking to himself. The Rambam is saying, right? If I believe that the world is created as nihilo, right? So how do I deal with God's incorporeality? Because I'm asserting that there's been a change in God, which is in fact antithetical and contradicts the negative theology, which I've been espousing up to now in the Mer Devucha. That's really the Rambam's kasha. Now, I want to go with how he answers this kasha. Now, he says, the Rambam says, Roy lu l'chol bar das l'chshoiv al pisra and koshizev v'gili saidai. There's a side here. There better be a side. There's a side here. Now, first of all, before we even go into how the Rambam refutes it, the Rambam spoke about this, something similar to this, in chapter 13. The Rambam spoke there, right? I'm referring now to the Schwartz edition, page 298, in the third paragraph, and there, I read from the Hebrew, Hanochenu l'shitaseinu, what's true according to our opinion, meaning the opinion of those who believe in Christ the Flow, Teras Meshach, Shazmanu Dova Nivra, the time is created. Just like everything in the world is created, time is created too. God didn't bring the world, right? The world into being at the beginning of any specific time. Because time is one of the creations. Which, by the way, Derech Agav is one of the. Right? Now, Hayam is buying it, says the Rambam. I want you to think about this. Ma'ayt. I want you to think about this very, very carefully. Because if you don't think about this, then there's going to be arguments against this. Right? Because if you say that there's time before the creation, it'll have been katmos. In other words, there's no question about it. The Rambam understands that the creation of time is something which, in fact, actually has to be thought about very, very deeply. Because if, in fact, you say that time is created, I mean, if you understand the creation, in other words, if we got time before the creation, then it turns out that you have to believe in katmos, which means the following, which means like that. I want to sharpen the issue even further. The proofs of the Rambam in the introduction to the Chelek Sheni specifically asserted the incorporeality of God as a consequence that time, motion, meaning time, is infinite. So, the fact is that the Rambam says you have to think about, when you speak about creation ex nihilo, you have to really think deeply what this means. Because, what does it mean to say that time is created? There's a creation of time. What does this mean? Especially if I want to, in other words, what are Tanas Keneged? What are the counter arguments? How can the counter arguments are the argument that Rambam is making here in chapter 14? In other words, if you say that God created the world, right? That time is created ex nihilo, then you're forced to say that what? That there's potential and actuality in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's what Rambam is referring to. Now, the fact is, right? The fact is that this is the Rambam's problem, and he says it's a Gilui Sod here. It's a deep thing here. Now, I want to look at chapter 18. I'm going to skip to chapter 18 because I want to examine how is the Rambam going to argue now. Okay, so this is Parak Yuchas. I think he says, Derech HaRishayna. I guess this is the one, this is the first way which he's going to counter the argument that creation ex nihilo seems to demand a corporalization of God. Says the Rambam, Asher hain betzainim hi, zois asher bo, l'tanasa, it's tarach lo'idei shaloya yotza min ha'koyach alapoyo. In other words, those who believe turning the world are claiming that we have to admit that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went from a potential state to an active state. In other words, he went from a potential creator to an active creator. Kasha po b'zman mesuyim v'loy po b'zman acher. He acted one time, then another time. Bo'em o'id keitz about fichin safek zo. He says, it's clear how we're about to fix this. Interesting. I mean, in chapter 14, he made the question, you know, so, right? Now, ki inyan zeh mechayev, b'chol ma shemukah, mechoy mebal efsharas umetzurah. Kasher guf kazeh poyol b'tzurotze, la'achah shaloi po, hayom bo beherch adov ma b'koyach v'yotze la poyol. Hayolom kein beherch b'yotze, mikeim et shanach hazeh izhucha hoich b'hoich z'gah b'yitzuot b'abalus chumrim. Ulama, she'enu guf e'ilu choymeh, אין בעצמוס אפשרות כלל. כל מה שיש לו הוא תומם בפויל, לכן אין הטיינה הזויס מתחייב לגביו, ואין זה נמל שהוא יפה בזמן מסוים. Basically, the Rambam is saying is that you can't say this about God. In other words, that which we say that something which creates goes from the potential to the actual state, that's only a physical object. But you can't say that about a God. Why can't you say about that about God? By definition, because you can't talk about God. Now, Derech Agav, before we even go into detail what the Rambam is saying, it's very interesting that this is not the only place in the Megillah Nevuchim we use this ploy. In fact, the Yeshiva Sheva knows this from Perakei Nichols Tshuva, right? The Rambam has a problem, but the Rambam has raised the question. He raises it in Hilchos Tshuva Parakei. He raised it in a different way in the Moreh Nevuchim, Chelek Gimel, I think Perichav Yutes Chav Chaf Aleph. He raised the question: is how could there be free will and God's knowledge? So what's interesting is that in other words, in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam says, well, because God, the Knower, the object of knowledge, and the knowledge, the act of knowledge, are one and the same. And in other words, the Rambam also says too, in God's knowledge is part of his essence. The Rambam says it too in section 1, chapter 68. In other words, you can't know. In other words, to answer the question of free will, you have to say that God's knowledge is his essence. Just like you can't know his essence, you can't know his knowledge. God's intellect is his essence, he explains in chapter 68. He's making here a very, very similar type of argument. But somehow, this thing which you speak about God, you can't, in other words, this is the physical concept. With God, actually potentially, God is so infinite they have no meaning. What do you have no meaning? So first of all, in other words, it's clear that he's not giving an answer. He's not giving an answer. What he's saying is, right, is that somehow, when you say God creates something, it has no human or physical analogy. It's almost like God's knowledge. It has no analogy. God's knowledge is not our knowledge. Right? God's intellect is not our intellect. And God's creation, I don't know. God's creation or God's is not ours. But what does that answer? Like by definition, What does that answer? Now, the fact is that this argument, what does it mean to say God's knowledge is his essence? So if you look at my article on negative theology in the first edition of Rishimu, you'll see that I interpreted that as saying is that when the Rambam says property X is the essence of God, what it really means philosophically is that the property is almost like a divine attribute of man. For example, God's intellect is his essence means that man is created with God's intellect. But with man's intellect is analogous to God's intellect. God's knowledge is his essence. I showed in the Rambam that man knows the way God knows, except that there are made a distinction that man knows things sometimes potentially unactual, and God always knows things actual. In other words, it's not a violation of negative theology to say that God's essence is X, Y, and Z, because really what the Rambam is saying is that X, Y, and Z become properties of man, imitatio Dei, imitating God. That was my thesis and my article of negative theology. That was my big chiddush. I want to take what I said there and apply it here. What the Rambam is really saying is, they don't say in yeshiva shalosh, they'll put in philosophical language, is that the concept, this concept of God as a creator, is really a din in man. In other words, says the Rambam, the answer to the question, how could there be a change in God, is because there isn't a change in God. It's a perception of man. In other words, meaning what? In other words, there's a dimension. In other words, man, there's a dimension. In other words, there's a dimension of creation which is in the mind of man. In other words, creation ex nihilo is not a reality in the physical world. It's a property of man. In other words, man relates to God in a certain respect in terms of creation ex nihilo. In other words, creation ex nihilo is not something physical. It's a concept. It's a musak.
Physically?
Physically, the world's eternal.
So it's much the opposite of the Yetzirah.
Right. Right. Once again. In other words, the Rambam's thesis here is like this. In other words, first of all, I mean, what's the Rambam's thesis? First of all, if the Rambam's saying, we speak about Krishna next to Yalo, Balabatish. What the Rambam's saying is, that when we speak about Krishna next to Yalo, we don't know what we're talking about. Not only that too, we're not talking about anything real. Or put it this way, what we're talking about is nonsense. When you say God creates something, it's an nonsensical statement because there's no concept of God as a creator.
But without creation, next thing we've got no miracles.
Well, we'll get to that. Oh, no, not according to the Platonic theory.
But why?
The Rambam says clearly in chapter 12, which we've gone through many times,
right,
that you could live with Plato's theory of creation next thing of eternity.
Why does man need, or why did God? I guess God didn't do anything.
I'll tell you why does man need a concept of creation ex nihilo, for a very, very simple reason. In chapter 20, 21, in the third section of the Megillah Nevuchim, God has to infinitize God's knowledge in order to allow man to have free will. Lemaitza, if God cannot create the world ex nihilo, God doesn't have free will. God is subservient to the laws of the universe, according to Aristotle.
But you haven't solved anything. It's an illusion.
No, it's not an illusion. It's a reality of the way of man's perception of the world.
Which is an illusion.
I'm going to call it an illusion.
What's in chapter 20?
In chapter 20, the Rambam makes that God's knowledge is infinite, and therefore man, Rambam has to say, how could man has free will only if God's going to punish or reward man based upon his actions? Ah, we see things opposite, Sadiq. The answer is that God's knowledge is infinite. We can understand God's knowledge. So we can always assume that man is being rewarded or punished appropriately. I speak about this in my Rishimu article. I want to say the following thing over here too. If you look in carefully at what the Rambam writes in chapter 25, creation ex nihilo is really needed that God can have free will. He can change things, he can punish people, he can choose Klal Yisrael. Now, the fact is that why does God have to have free will? In chapter 20 and 21 of the God, the third Chayla, because man has to have free will. Man can have free will, God doesn't have free will. So once again, man's, in other words, concept of his own, his consciousness of his own free will has to be derived from a notion of God's free will. The notion of a notion of God's free will can only come if God created the world, creation ex nihilo. In any case, what I want to say is, even if we don't want to go as far as the...
I mean, the Kabbalists...
forget about Kabbalah. No, this is before the Tzimtzum.
I understand. So in a post-Tzimtzum world, they say that God never changed, nothing happened, all of creation, and God is everything, it's only an illusion, it's only
right,
from man's perspective.
Right.
So Tribbetz is saying exactly the opposite.
Right.
God's always existed, God's always existed, nothing's ever changed because it's always been like this. But from our perspective,
and
we're
right,
thing that's creation.
It's called conservation of the God-man relationship. Now, by the way, I just want to mention that my I saw today that my former professor at Princeton, John Wheeler, was nifter at the age of 96. And anyway, but I discussed this issue with him one time, but with Christian ex nihilo. But that's what I want to say. Right. Right. Yeah. Anyway.
So how does that relate to here?
The Rambam held.
No, but
that
I said Nafkmin in the parrot over there. So the Rambam was able to make a statement about God's knowledge
in order to accommodate man's free will. Right.
But here, Rambam's not making any statement about anything. He's just saying that
I know.
Man hasn't observed.
But it's the same idea. In other words, and I want to claim the same idea. In other words, the claim idea is, see, I mean, even without my what I'm trying to say, I mean, the Rambam is saying is, I have a kasha, you don't understand God. So that means that if I believe creation needs law, means I can understand God. Oh, put it this way. Creation ex nihilo means that I can't think of creation ex nihilo in any physical sense, which really means it wasn't a physical event.
And what becomes possible by creation ex nihilo?
God has free will, and therefore man can have free will.
Because of creation ex nihilo.
Right. That's what I want to claim. I mean, we have to, obviously, this is a daring thesis of mine, but I think this is mukha from the Rambam. And that's why Derech Agav, that's why the Rambam says, "Roy loy lachol bar das lachshev apizran koyzi zev a gili side." You have to think about this. There's a gili side here. What's the gili side here? This is the gili side. This is the deep secret. This is the secret message of the Torah of the Vuchim. There's no argument. We haven't refuted Aristotle's proofs of the turning of the world. There's man, there's the observable reality, and man can imagine creation ex nihilo. That's part of man's intellect. That's what free will is. How much more time do we have?
13.
I want to claim this is the pshat of the Rambam. So in other words, the fact is, right, and this is what the Rambam was speaking about here, when he spoke about time, I want you to think about it. Very deeply. The Rambam is sending out messages. You don't have to be such an intelligent reader. That in fact, over here, that in fact, there is no debate between the creation ex nihilists and those who claim the eternity of the universe. There's no debate. They're speaking on different levels, different paradigms. Different dimensions of man's intellectual apprehension of reality.
Is this going to work with the Platonic view of eternity?
I think so too. Because in the Platonic view of eternity, you have the same thing too. In other words, creation ex nihilo, according to Maimonides, from the total absent, you know. That's what I think. We'll speak about it. In other words, it could, it could possibly be that according to the Rambam, you could say that basically in the Platonic view of eternity world, basically there's no steel between the two. The two things are hainuhach. In other words, we'll get to that. But in other words,
your teretz is only working in
Aristotelian. Right, the Aristotelian thing, right. But so it comes out, as we spoke about, that in other words, I have to have a stira. Why do I have to have a stira? Because there is two fundamental pillars of Maimonidean thought in the Magen Avochim. Pillar one is that God is incorporeal, monotheism. That's pillar number one. As the Rambam begins his work, B'Shem Hashem Kel Oilav, which the Rambam says is monotheism, Avraham Avinu. And pillar number two is man's free will. A person has to believe in monotheism, otherwise there's no Avodah Zarah. A person has to believe man's free will, otherwise there's no Torah and Mitzvahs. But the two things philosophically are contradictory to each other. If I believe in God's incorporeality, right, then the world's eternal. Then there's no creation ex nihilo. And then from whence is man's? What is the source of man's free will? So it has to be that there's a new deuce with the economy, these two concepts. They're a stira. They could be a stira. They could be a contradiction. Because, right? Like Sokhala Rises Panai. And this is the quote-unquote secret message of the Beit HaNevochim. The public thinks it's a stira. That's why the Rambam is setting...
Doesn't know it's a stira.
In other words, the Rambam says in chapter 18, Bora Boy is very clear. Case of Mafricha, I say, how we refute this. But then in Perak Yadalah, the Rambam says, you gotta think about this. Gilui Saida, he makes it into a religious concept. Luchnias. Okay. I think we're going to conclude on this happy or unhappy note. And we will make sure some continue. There's a lot more to say. We're only beginning. And we'll get back to you, Mitzvah Shem, next week, even though with you, my listeners, there's no time. Okay.